Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the She's My Sister podcast. Today, we're doing an episode all about writing, which don't leave just yet. We're not going to have like a boring English class. We're going to have some fun, entertaining chit chat. Plus, Amy's going to read some of her creative writing pieces from when she was in college because she does have a creative writing minor. And Katie also has her major is childhood education, but she got her master's in child literacy. So they both have all the knowledge on all things writing. And so they are going to kind of take the lead on this one. But sit back and relax and enjoy this episode all about writing.
Dang, all the knowledge is a hard thing to live up to.
It's really, really hard for me not to say I got a lifetime of knowledge anytime I hear that.
Right.
All right, so quick little life update. As of when we're recording this, my due date's in 3 days, and baby girl's been a little bit of a drama queen, just causing some contractions every night that are painful enough that I can't sleep through them, but like then they never get close enough together to like do anything. So, you know, just wants to remind me that I'm here, Mom. Don't forget about me.
It's a little fanfare for her entrance into the world.
Yes. So this morning I had my checkup. Everything's looking good. My doctor went ahead and did a membrane sweep. So I'm hoping that was very uncomfortable, a little painful, but I'm hoping that it is all worth it and gets things going tonight. So with any luck, there'll be a new baby girl here in the next day or two.
And we are so excited. I kind of jumped the gun because Katie wasn't responding back to my text message as fast as she normally does. So I was like, oh, she's in labor. I just know it. So I called our mom and I was like, Mom, I think she's in labor. Have you heard anything? And she's like, no, but I wouldn't doubt it. And so we were getting all excited. And then she called me back and I realized that I got a little excited and she was not in labor. So had to call Mom back and let her know.
Okay, good. You did call Mom back.
I texted her, but I did let her know. False alarm. But anyways, I don't really have any life updates for this episode. Just hanging out with my baby boy a lot and working a little bit and just having a great time.
What are some updates for him? What is his new like?
So
tips or things he's learned.
He just turned 5 months yesterday, and his favorite things are when Anton comes home from work. He gets super, super excited. It's the cutest thing ever. He loves when we bounce him on the exercise ball, and he likes to just, like, we hold him, and he, like, jumps up and down for, like, ever. He could do it seriously for a few hours, I think. And what else? Oh, he discovered his feet, and he thinks they are very interesting. Yeah. Oh, and he loves to blow raspberries. So he's constantly like basically spitting at me, but it's so cute. So I don't mind. But if it was anybody else, I would not be so happy, but he can spit on me all he wants. And he does this. Anton's trying to teach him how to like give kisses. Uh-huh. And basically what he does is he just opens his mouth and pushes his mouth against our cheeks and drools all over us.
Oh, which... I remember when
Jill would do those. Yeah. Which like, if it was anyone else, I wouldn't like it, but he can drool all over me. So yeah, he's just a cutie pie.
It's different when it's your own kid. They can do all kinds of stuff that most people would be like, that's disgusting. And you're like, I birthed this child, so nothing they do is going to disgust me that badly.
Yeah, I like the smell of his little stinky feet. And I like the smell of his little stinky neck.
That is disgusting. I will say, like, baby neck rolls get stanky, and that's gross.
I don't even care, though. Like, I think it smells... It's kind of like how when your dog's feet smell like Fritos, but you like it because you love your dogs.
I think we have different things that we love about our dogs.
Nala's feet always smell like Fritos, but I love Nala, so I don't even mind the smell. I'm not the only one, okay? I know I'm not the only one. Amy, back
Josie
me up here.
Had these, like, super
I get
stinky
it.
Toes the other day, like she'd been wearing her. Well, they weren't that stinky, but anyway. So she's sitting next to me, and she like sets her feet on my belly, and I'm like, and as she did that, baby sister like kicked super hard right as her foot was on there. I said, Josie, you're trying to stink her out. She said, gross. What's that smell? And now she thinks it's just hilarious to put her bare feet on my tummy, and she's like, I'm stinking out baby sister.
Oh my gosh.
She wants her to be out too.
Yep. What about you, Amy? What are your life updates right now?
Not a whole lot. Just continuing to get ready for the move and selling our house.
What are some potential places you could be moving?
We'll go to Virginia for 6 months. And then after that, it's sort of just like a, you know, wish list and applying for positions. But we're hoping Hawaii.
I will cross my fingers and hope for that too.
I think it's a popular place, so
yeah,
we'll hope for the best.
Well, let's jump right in and have Amy, why don't you go ahead and read us one of your humorous pieces from college.
Alrighty, so this first one is called Picky Princess's Personal Advertisement. So, like, think of those advertisements people used to put in the newspaper. I don't know if they still do that.
The personal ads?
Yeah, do they still do that now that they have, like, Tinder and those things?
I think so.
Maybe they
Do you like the Pina Colada song?
Yeah, the pineapple song.
Exactly.
The Pina Colada song.
So this is the, kind of like the Pina Colada song, only for princesses. And as you go along, see if you can figure out who each one is. I'm sure it won't be that hard. Here we go. I can be part of your world. Courageous Red seeks handsome prince, open to happily ever afters, singing for all occasions, and unusual hair grooming methods. Good with dogs, great swimmer, a fin fetish encouraged, must not be intimidated by strong father figures or plethora of would-be sisters-in-law. Let's run the hidden pine trails of the forest. Old spirit with a young heart hunts love around next river bend. Fellow adventurer should be a vivacious painter, monumental singer, in touch with nature and respect ancient trees. Preferably blonde, patient with raccoons, and godly butter, with biblical names such as John. Give me a library and I'll give you my heart. Bold beauty looks to share something more than average provincial life. Partner should be open to anger management counseling. Employ extensive staff. Love intelligence and never decorate with antlers. Seeker willing to look past chest hair, back hair, all unwanted or excessive hair. I'll make a man out of you. Girl we're fighting for pursues normal warrior. Applicant must have the strength of a raging fire, be mysterious as the dark side of the moon, and not scared off by the occasional cross-dressing. This female fighter don't want none unless you defeated the Huns, son. I am a damsel, and I'm in distress. I got this. Romantic with reluctant heart seeks wonder boy. Candidate should be accepting of sass, sarcasm, shady past, ulterior motives, and mortality. Preferably with rippling pectorals, a white-winged pinto, powerful family connections, super strength, and a personalized vase. And that is the last of them.
Okay, the first one was Ariel. The second one was Pocahontas. The third one was Belle. The fourth one was Mulan.
Yep.
And I forgot what the last one was.
Meg?
Meg
Dang it, I knew what it was, but I was like memorizing them in my head, trying not to forget the order. And yeah,
you did a good job with the order.
Thanks.
Yeah, because they weren't. I mean, they probably weren't that hard to get if you know your Disney. They weren't too hard.
Right, right.
I was like singing the songs in my head.
As a kid, I thought that John Smith was like so much more handsome, but then as an adult, Coquelin. Like, it's not like they really gave you much as far as his personality. So that's not really fair. But I feel like he was much more attractive.
I think they both were.
Just in my opinion.
Honestly, Pocahontas is one that I watched when I was a kid a few times, but we didn't own it. So I like don't even know it very well.
I've rewatched it as an adult. It's not a favorite of mine.
No, I haven't seen that one in a really long time.
I will say, it's funny because Josie knows we were playing with some different like Disney stickers this morning, and she pulls up Belle and she goes, that's your favorite, right, Mama? She knows that I like Belle.
Yeah, I do love the music from Pocahontas, though. Some of those songs are really good.
Yeah, I agree. Just Around the River Bend kind of comes up anytime I go kayaking.
Yep, me too.
Hiking, that kind of thing. That one gets brought up a lot.
And Colors of the Wind was like my favorite song on Disney karaoke that I had growing up.
Jimmy and I used to make him like because I think it came out, I want to say when I was in like 5 or 6, I would have Jimmy recreate Pocahontas with me, the Run the Hidden Pine Trails of the Forest scene, and I would have him be John Smith.
I'm sure he loved that.
He was just fine with it.
What class did you write that one for?
That was for a creative writing class. I don't remember which one exactly. I think it was the first creative writing class I took at Central. So that was, I wrote that when I was a freshman.
Was the assignment to write like a personal ad, or was it?
I think it was to write a personal ad, and you could write it for anything. You could write it from the perspective of like a couch looking for a home, or just someone looking for love, or you could do whatever you wanted. Mm. And I thought, oh, this will be fun to do like multiple segments of it. That's something for me that writing, having a prompt always really helps. Like that one, writing the personal ad, you know, that how they wouldn't come up with this otherwise probably. And also just writing about something that I really enjoy or that I know. So including Disney in there, it made it really, really easy. I didn't have to go look up any of the lines or quotes from the movies. I just knew them. So that made it more fun for me to write about it. Whenever I tried to write something in creative writing, at least, that wasn't something I actually was interested in or enjoyed or thought was funny, I had a really hard time with it, and I usually like either it didn't turn out very good or I just had to switch topics.
Right. That's really, I think that's important for like any genre or like any age group too.
Right.
Picking something that's important to you or that you're interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the same with like academic, like papers and, well, not necessarily academic. You do your best, but sometimes it's just going to be boring. But for speeches, if I ever had to do for a speech, I tried to find something I was actually interested in or passionate about. Like for my advanced speaking class, we had to pick a topic, and the whole point of the speech was to arouse some kind of emotion from your audience.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to kind of tell them like, you know, what that, you had to write like what that emotion or two, a couple emotions were, but, and then afterwards you'd ask the class, like, what are the emotions you're feeling? And then see if you actually got them to feel the way you wanted them to feel.
Oh.
So I did my speech, and it was basically talking about how, sexual assault offenders and rapists, that they should be more harshly and severely punished no matter who they were, basically. Uh-huh. And I found a bunch of cases of teachers that had slept with their students and had got next to no punishment. Like they were on probation, never went to jail, things like that. And after at the end of this speech, I also included a bunch of statistics, because that always helps. You can back it up with facts. And at the end of it, people definitely were mad, which is what I wanted them to be. I wanted them to be frustrated and enraged and just mad. So it worked.
I remember when you were writing that one.
That one, yeah. And with that one, like for writing outlines for speeches, obviously you don't need as much detail. But where I do have all the detail is where my statistics are, because obviously you have to have those accurate and you need to have where they came from. So a lot of the outline I have for this speech, it's mostly those specific cases and statistics, and the rest of it I just memorized, or it was my own experience, so I just knew it.
What would you say was your favorite genre or type of writing?
I remember when I first got into the minor, I thought I was going to enjoy fiction. I didn't like the idea of having to write about myself all the time. And though I do enjoy the fiction and some of those are really fun, I actually loved my nonfiction class, where the point was just to write about either things that I had lived through or things that I had seen other people go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize how easy it would be to write about myself and make fun of myself. Like, I remember, I wish I could find it, but I wrote a story about the time I accidentally cut a little kid's finger in kindergarten, and everyone thought I was evil for a little while, and I couldn't cut out my own, like, projects. I had to have this kid cut out my leprechaun for me, and he gave him pointy elbows, and I never forgot that, and I read that in front of the class, and I remember having a lot of fun being able to deliver it the way I wrote it.
Uh-huh.
And I think that helps a lot when you're writing anything that's meant to be humorous, is if you can deliver it yourself. So I'm not sure if it came off quite as well or not when it was being read by someone else, but that's what I had a lot of fun in that class. I was comfortable enough with the people in it that I liked reading whatever I'd written and getting feedback, and just if I made them laugh, that made me so happy. That was my favorite part.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
I was going to ask you, Amy, when it came to like reading your pieces out loud in front of a class, how, especially when you're writing about things that are like really emotional or intense, as far as like, I don't know, especially when it's personal, mm-hmm. how did you compose yourself and still deliver it the way that you intended. Because like for me, that is like my worst fear, public speaking of any kind. Mm-hmm. And so were there ways that you like, I don't know, things that you found to help calm yourself and kind of center before starting, or was it just easy for you?
I think for some of the pieces, it was pretty easy. I would go up like ready to read them and excited and know it was probably going to be kind of funny and it was just lighthearted. That's how a lot of my stuff was, because I preferred to write those sort of things. And I think that there's a lot less pressure when it's more, it's not as silly, you know, it's not as serious of a topic. Of course, there were times where I thought, oh, what if I'm not going to find any of it funny and I'm just going to be reading this? They're going to be staring at me like with no smiles, no laughter, no nothing. But I think it helped, and I remembered everyone in that classroom was like, as far as I knew, rooting for me. Because that's how I felt when anyone went up to read a piece, I was rooting for them. I wanted it to go so well. And the same with any speech class. And I think that's how most people feel. When someone gets up in front of you to give a speech, you don't want it to be horrible and awkward and for them to stammer and to forget what they're doing, because it makes everyone have secondhand embarrassment and you all feel awful. So in that moment, I think everyone's really rooting for you in your class, whether you feel like it or not. I think they want you to do well, because otherwise it's going to be awkward and none of us like that.
Right.
So I think it helped me. I realized they want me to do well. I want to do well. I want to have fun. I want to enjoy this. And it helped that, you know, in the class, I was just reading off the paper, so I could just look at that if I wanted to. And it also helped that I had a teacher that I really, really liked. She was awesome. And she got me into the minor and everything. And I remember when I was reading one of those, I would just look at her and she was always smiling, like this big old smile. And it made it easy to keep going. Yeah, she was really fun. You know, I could always look at her just in case no one else was. And I think with the more serious ones, I think I don't know. I'm not sure if it was just easy for me or if I just cared enough that I wanted to get it out, whether maybe emotional or not.
Would you tell the story about the time when you made everyone in the class think that your mom had died?
Yep, I was actually going to get to that one.
Okay.
And there are times
when I think about that every once in a while, and I think it's so funny.
And also, obviously, practice helps. So the story that I'm about to tell, it was the first week of my first creative writing class of my, I think, second or first quarter of college. Like, it was pretty, you know, it's pretty new. And the day had started off, I think Jack, like, the cat had thrown up. And I had to clean it up. And I was running late. And I went outside to throw the garbage away. And I slipped on ice and fell really hard on my hip and my butt. And so I was hurting. And I hadn't slept the night before. And it was just a rough start to the day. I get to this class, which is the same teacher, Terry, that I, you know, really liked. And we were supposed to have written out our favorite poem. And we were going to read it to the class. And then say, hey, this is why it's my favorite poem. This is why I like it. I had forgotten to do that. So I started writing out this poem really quickly, as quick as I could. And I didn't have time to write all of it before the first person went up. So I'm trying to look up and listen to her, but also write at the same time. And I was doing a good job of multitasking. But the teacher had noticed me. And she was right. That was disrespectful to not be paying attention to them. So after the person finished, she called me out and said, hey, what was her poem about? And why did she say she liked it? Luckily, I'd been paying attention enough that I could say it, but I remember feeling mortified that the teacher had put me on the spot and called me out in front of everybody, and then I had to go next. And so I got up there, and I'm already emotional because I'm in pain. I'm embarrassed I just got called out, and I start to read this poem that it's called The Children's Hour, and it's one that Mom would help me practice because I was supposed to memorize when I was little. And after I read it, I was saying, well, this is my favorite poem because it makes me think of my mom. It's actually her birthday today. And throughout, I don't remember when, but I started tearing up and almost started crying. So that is the day I made everyone think my mom was dead. And I remember after class, in front of just me and her, the teacher said, is your mom okay? And I was like, yep, she's fine. I halfway considered pretending the mom had like passed away or something just because I was
Amy.
But I didn't. I told everybody the truth. I was like, nope, she's fine. I mean, I think I only ever told like two other people in that class that I actually became friends with. The other ones probably just thought mom was dead.
They were
polite enough to not ask. So, you know, things get better with practice. It got easier. I got less emotional and nervous. And I think just the more confidence you get in your own writing and your speeches and that kind of thing, the easier it gets. So, you know, just lots and lots of practice. I think I've taken like 5 speech classes throughout college. And so by the end of it, I really, really enjoyed giving speeches. I liked it.
Mm-hmm. I had to take a speech class as like a prerequisite at community college. And people probably thought someone died in my life every time I had to give a speech because I was on the verge of tears and like my face was like beet red and I was, oh man. I remember my teacher would keep track of how many times I would say and I would be so nervous. I would tell myself like, don't say all the time. But there would be like check marks all over my paper in red of how many times she was like keeping track and it was terrible.
That was just makes you me out. Yeah, because then it makes you think about it more and it almost makes you say it. So you know what I realized, Amy? Last time I hung out with you guys at Christmas time, I didn't realize how frequently, I don't know where I picked up this saying. Apparently I started saying, to be fair, or in all fairness. I don't know why, but I started saying it very frequently. And every time I would say it, Jaden would make like a little comment because it reminded him of, I don't remember what, some TV show. Oh, it makes me
think of this TV show where they say, to be fair.
And so.
Really annoying. He does that every time
Every time I said it. And it was like, oh no. It really drew my attention because I feel like that's not a weird expression.
No.
But it is if you're saying it constantly. And so now I'm super like hyper over aware of when I say it. And I think I'm saying it more frequently because it's like at the forefront of my mind now. So thanks, Jaden.
Oh, gosh. I think we all go through phases of saying some particular phrase we pick up. And a lot of time I pick it up from other people. Like we have a friend who will go, he'll be telling the story and he says, yeah. And so I was out this night, as you do. Like he includes that phrase, as you do, when he's like saying something funny. And so I started working that into my stories. And I thought, where did that come from? And I think we all do it. And then you cycle on and you find a new phrase.
You know, that I feel like does apply to writing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you read a lot of the same author's writing, you'll notice that they tend to have a certain style. Maybe there's certain vocabulary words.
Yes.
Or have you ever found ways that they organize their sentences, mm-hmm. and then that style oftentimes will find itself like flowing into your work as well.
Right. Have you ever noticed when an author, though, and it might not be that often to them because when they're writing, it's going to take them a long time between writing in this chapter and this chapter way down the line. But if I'm reading all of it, like half a book in a day, I'm going to notice every single time they use that expression. So this author I'm reading, she kept using this term when the person was incredibly scared. She'd say like her bowels turned to water or turned watery or something. I'm like, what the heck does that mean? Does that mean she just doesn't feel good? Like, did she have diarrhea just now? I don't know what's going on. I don't like it. I think she meant just like that she felt like so scared, her like insides like twist. I don't know.
Okay,
but that particular phrase was not.
But if your bowels turn to water. I mean, a lot of people get like nervous bowels and like they end up having to rush to the bathroom when they're scared or nervous about something. But that definitely sounds like she had diarrhea. And I feel like that's just a weird phrase to use consistently throughout a book.
And it was probably only like 3 times the entire book, but it was enough for me to notice and go, no, I'm choosing to believe that that did not happen. And that she just felt queasy or something.
Just having that in the book one time would have made me like, what?
Mm-hmm. Right. So 3 times was more than enough. I thought, geez, this girl needs to go to her doctor after all is said and done and get this part figured out.
You know, that reminds me, you know, thinking just now talking about, you know, her proofreader or editor probably should have picked up on, hey, you're using this phrase too frequently. When you feel like you are finished with a piece, how do you, or at least a rough draft, how do you go about editing or proofreading that? Do you
read whether, it? Go ahead. Yeah, whether it's academic or creative writing, I go back and a lot of time I read it in my head really quick and go through it, and then I read it out loud. Because there are things that you don't notice when you're skimming and you're just reading in your head. Your mind wants sentences to make sense, so it'll just auto-correct them as you read it. So reading out loud helps with that, but I still think that when it's our own writing, we still kind of do that. We read the sentence the way we intended it to sound, not necessarily how we actually wrote it.
Right.
So I always have as many people as possible read something if I can. Mm-hmm. I definitely had you read a couple papers in college. Thanks for
that. I know it's weird, but I enjoy proofreading things.
I am grateful for that. That worked out well for me.
I actually kind of enjoy like proofreading papers and that kind of thing. Editing.
You are a teacher, Katie.
That's true.
There you go. There you go.
Except with elementary students, you're proofreading, but you're also deciphering as you go. I got very good at figuring out, like, okay, what is this word supposed to say? What is it they're trying to write here?
I'm impressed that, like, the kids were good enough that you were proofreading anything. I don't remember being able to write that much in kindergarten that there would be anything to proofread. But maybe that's because I was
five. You know, by the end of the year, kindergartners can write quite a bit. But, I mean, I also taught second grade as well. And second graders can write a lot.
Just another, like, just if we're going for writing tips, something that my teachers told me, and I think it helped my writing, she said to write more specific things so you don't just write – something vague. You don't say, oh, the car. You say what kind of car it was. You don't say walked into the house or walked into the door. You say what kind of door it was. You have to be really specific with these things, and not just to give people an image to think of, but also to give them something more memorable and something to, like, latch onto. It just makes it more real, I think.
Right.
And then one of the first things I had a hard time with and I had to get over was using cliches. Like, I remember describing, I think I was writing about a breakup or something, and I was talking about blue eyes, and I think I made some lame comparison, like, eyes like the ocean, you know, that old Princess Bride on her, and she's like, nope, we're not doing that, and a few other things like that, just keeping out anything that sounds too cliche. But at the same time, I think with writing, you don't want to try to make it sound too smart, and what I mean, like, don't overcomplicate writing. Because if you look in, like, any novel, the author is going to say things like, oh, he said, or he asked. Like, you can make it simple now and then. It doesn't always have to be some thesaurus word that no one would normally think of.
Right.
That's fine sometimes, but it doesn't have to be. I think when you make it overly complicated, it stops being fun to read, and it stops flowing as well. And it just sounds like you're trying to show off and sound smart.
Right. Like that episode of Friends where Joey is writing a letter and he uses a thesaurus for every word.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't make any sense at the end.
Exactly.
Amy, do you want to read another piece? Maybe something that's, like, different from the first one? Something that's...
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Sure. So this one is nonfiction. It's one that I wrote in that class. And this one is one of the few ones that I wrote that's actually a little more serious. This one is titled Grandpa. What's your name again? He laughs after he says this, trying to play it off as a joke, embarrassed that he really has no idea. I'm Amy, Grandpa, I say with a big smile. There's no way I'm letting him see that it still hurts a little. I should be used to it by now. He hasn't remembered my name off the top of his head in a few years. Not since Grandma died and the Alzheimer's started to progress more rapidly. Traumatic experiences can do that. He knows that he knows me, that we're related. Sometimes I'm his granddaughter, but sometimes he starts to tell me a story of how he met my mom. I correct him there, reminding him I'm not Marianne. Oftentimes I don't correct him, though. When he tells me the time he dove off the cliffs in Acapulco, or how he parachuted into Germany, or how he found gold in Alaska, or that time he met John Wayne, and Bob Hope, and Bing Crosby, and Elvis, who apparently was actually a really nice guy. He loves telling these stories. Did any of them actually happen? There's about a 99% chance they did not. But sometimes I like to think my grandpa had a secret life that no one knows about. Maybe he was a spy or worked for the FBI before he met my grandma. Spy or not, he has led an incredible life. If he wants to spice it up a little, at least I hear a new story every time I visit. Sometimes I'll repeat an especially fantastic story to my mom, like the one where my grandpa talked a young woman out of committing suicide, slowly managing to relieve her of the revolver gripped in her hand. As it turned out, that one was true. No matter how difficult the Alzheimer's battle is against him, he continues to fight back. Greeting each day with more enthusiasm than men's decades younger. He likes to remember his first language, often saying, c'est la vie, French for that's life. And it's a beautiful one. And that's the ending.
Well, if you were trying to make me cry, you did it.
Oh, you're just emotional because you're about to have a baby.
It's fine. Oh, that too. Yeah.
No, there are a few lines in there that...
I remember that one when you first wrote it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I only wrote that one like a few months before he died, and then I remember it. They had this Manastas journal that it was just a local journal in the area where I went to college, and they had published, you know, students and other local authors and stuff. And that one actually, after he died, I found out they wanted to put it in there, so that was kind of cool. Yeah,
That is really cool. I enjoyed that one though. That, and it's a very, I think it's a relatable and a real one that, you know, a lot of other people, I think once you've experienced something, you become aware of how many other people have also gone through that experience.
Right.
You know, now having had a relative with Alzheimer's, now I notice it with a lot of other people that I know as well. You know, they're going through the same thing.
Me too. I remember when I wrote that one, I think the piece was supposed to be more serious and maybe sad, or maybe the teacher wanted to have like a specific theme to your piece, whatever it was. And I was saying like, this is like a sad piece. And I remember she read it and wrote some comment about how it wasn't like sad enough. And I was like, maybe you just haven't experienced this, because I'm not going to make it all doom and gloom. I'm going to show the positives, you know, as much as I can, because that's how he looked at it. You know, that's how he tried to be.
Right.
And I remember being really frustrated when that was the big comment the teacher left was, oh, it's just not that sad. I was like, okay.
Well, and the thing is that the reality of the situation was that it wasn't just sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like, oh, there's no more joy to be found, because he certainly was able to still find joy in little
things. Oh, of course.
Day to day. And that was the reality of it. It wasn't that, oh, we're going to focus just on all the negatives, or just, you know, sugarcoat it and just focus on the positive parts.
Mm-hmm.
It's all intermixed, and, you know, one minute you can be laughing and one minute not.
Yeah. It just felt like the most dismissive comment to make, like, well, this isn't really sad.
Right.
I mean.
Well, and it wasn't sad to her because it wasn't sad necessarily to her, because she must not have been able to relate. Whereas if someone had gone through something similar or had a relative they loved that had been in the same situation, they probably would have found it to be a little bit more sad.
Right.
Which I think is the whole thing with writing. It's like, you know what, whenever I'm looking for a new book, I always make the mistake of going to the reviews and reading them. And then I get super confused, because it'll be like a 5-star review where it's like the best book I've ever read. And then the one after it is 1-star and it's like the worst book I've ever read. But it's right. Because your situation and your life is going to make you relate to things or not relate to things. So it's like no one is always going to, you know, we're not going to all agree on most things. So
rarely do I ever read the reviews. I'll read, you know, the synopsis of the book maybe, or not the synopsis, because I don't know the ending, but like I'll read, you know, a little blurb from it about what the plot is or about what the topic is, rather than, you know, the reviews of it, I guess.
Yeah, because then you'll never pick a book, because it's like, oh my gosh.
Right.
Seriously. I think I rely more on just getting like one person to say, oh, hey, I liked this, and then I might try it. Or
right.
And also, I don't like reading too many reviews, because I don't want to have anything given away. I don't want to know hardly anything about it. I want to go in and have all of it be new.
Right. You know, one that kind of makes me think of another, a writing tip I got was just to like, don't overthink it and just start. Mm-hmm. You can always go back and revise, or and don't get tied down to a specific topic. You know, maybe you started going in one direction, but then you realize this really isn't working. Don't be afraid to, don't see that as wasted time or lost work. Don't be afraid to just trash that and go in a different direction, because that was all part of your process getting you to where you're trying to go. Don't feel like, oh, I wasted this time, and then have to just like muddle through it, because that's not going to get you anywhere.
Which is always hard, but I remember doing that. I remember in a writing class turning in, I think it was the biggest grade we got, like it was the longest piece we were going to write that whole semester or whatever it was, and it just wasn't liked that well, and the grade wasn't good, and I feel like I was trying to write a novel in a like 10-page paper, you know. The storyline I picked out was way too big, and I think when I turned in my final, the only thing I kept was the main character's name. That was about it.
Yeah.
So, you know. And then I liked that one, and I got a good grade on it, and it just made a lot more sense for the assignment. So sometimes, you got to start over. And I don't usually, with creative writing, I don't usually start with any kind of outline or anything like that. I just start writing and see what happens. I get maybe the idea of a story and then go with that. Mm-hmm. Which is obviously very different than academic writing. That's where I have a very well thought out outline. And I have, you know, exactly what I'm going to write in my mind. Right. But with creative writing, I think it helps to just kind of see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amy, what is your favorite piece that you've ever written?
I don't know.
That's hard.
That's really hard. Plus, I haven't gone through and read a lot of them in a while. I think my favorite pieces tend to be the ones that I wrote about my own life, though.
Yeah.
The ones that I wrote that are fiction are kind of fun, and they usually feel like little bits of a bigger story to me, since I never had the time to write, like, a full book, you know? So I enjoy those ones, but to me, they feel unfinished, because they're kind of a glimpse of a story, whereas the ones from my own life, I think they're fun, because usually they're making fun of myself, and I like doing that.
Well, and they're more personal, too. They're kind of part of you.
Yeah, they're part of me. And those ones tend to be the ones that are where I'm trying to have more humor in them, whereas the fiction, I'm not. So I think those are some of my favorites.
Do you happen to have any of those handy?
I do have one.
Read it.
I have a few. I also have one that is a mix between fiction and also not like fiction, more like a guide. And I probably won't read the whole thing because it's a little bit longer, but this one also got published in the Manassas Journal. But what was kind of funny is I wrote it right before I started dating Jaden.
Mm-hmm.
And the title is The Best 9 Reasons to Be Single in College. And when I found out it was going to be in the journal, I was already dating Jaden. And I said, hey, so this is funny, but guess what? But this one I thought was really fun. I think I wrote it, you know, when I was single and I was really like having fun just being, I don't know, like 19 or whatever it was, and not feeling like I needed to check in with anybody and just doing my own thing and meeting lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is a little quick excerpt from the best 9 reasons to be single in college. The worst has happened. You and your boyfriend of 6 months have broken up. It's your first quarter of college and you don't know how to face it alone. The center of your world is gone, and now you must follow girl breakup protocol. Bring out the Ben and Jerry's, turn on your chick flick marathon, and hide yourself in the biggest sweats and sweatshirt you own. Problem? They're both his. Is this the correct reaction? Does being single mean lonely nights hiding from the rest of society, mourning the loss of a relationship that wasn't going anywhere in the first place? Not at all. You've been convinced that being in a relationship is the ultimate goal in life, but when it comes to college, there are plenty of perks to the single life. Sorry, Jaden. Reason number 1, everyone needs friends. You may think you're fine cuddled up in your cheetah snuggie, marathon watching The Walking Dead with your cat, but really, you need some human interaction. Your boyfriend might have come over 3 times a week and become a couch potato with you, but he couldn't possibly be your only friend. Interacting with one human is not enough, and the sooner you realize that friendship and single life, the better. That embrace the single life, the better. According to the Mental Health Foundation, friendships are the crucial element to protecting our mental health. College is where you make the friends you will keep forever. Unlike high school, you actually have more than 5 cliques to choose from, and you can find genuinely awesome individuals that will not judge, belittle, or act like 85-year-olds and stay at home every night doing their crossword puzzles. Unless you're into that, because then that's cool. This one I'm a little embarrassed to read. Reason number 2. Boys are like candy. You don't know your favorite until you've tried a few. I know we've all dated the hipster, the jock, the player, the stage 5 clinger, the one that ended up switching teams, and let's not forget the one who says I love you on the 3rd date. Skittles, Sour Patches, and Jolly Ranchers, you tried them all, made an assessment, and decided which one you liked the best. Think of boys in the same way. If you hadn't dated the jock, you never would have realized that you can't date someone just for their biceps. If you hadn't dated the player, you never would have learned that you should steer clear of boys that wear diamond earrings far too big for their ears, with catchphrases like, what's good, baby girl? But all joking aside, going on dates with an assortment of men is important to finding the kind of person you would one day actually want to stay with. Ella from Bellevue says, I think dating around is really important. I once dated a man I thought I was in love with, to later find out he liked men as much as I did. Dating different people helps you learn not only about them, but yourself as well. What kind of attention can you handle? Are you a one full call in the evening type of gal, or do you prefer constant texting throughout the entire day? Do you like to debate, or do you avoid confrontation? Would you rather stay up all night and sleep until noon, or rise and shine at 6 a.m.? Dating is a learning experience, but there's only so much you can learn from one teacher. And then it goes on. Reason number 3, it's time to grow up and figure out who you are, becoming a young person. Reason number four, homework stress and a little more stress. Reason number five, the gym can be a very beautiful place. And that kind of just went into how there's a lot of in-shape guys in college. And, you know, there's a few more. I think there ended up being 9 reasons in total.
Amy, you know what's funny is, so for those who don't know, Amy and I lived together in college. And it's funny because listening to this, I can picture, like, when you wrote it. Because I remember watching The Walking Dead, Snuggies were, like, really, and, yep. Like, it's just interesting. And I remember you reading the part about how boys are like candy or whatever, because I remember you asking me, you were like, is this too risque? Or you like asked me if it was like too, I don't know, too much. And I was like, I remember, it's so weird because I had completely forgotten about it until you started reading it. And I was like, oh man, I remember this. It's like taking me back.
Little snapshot into Amy's past.
Well, and I think we might have talked about this before, but The Walking Dead, we were watching it like every night in college for a while. And then it was like mm-hmm. Amy and I were both starting to have really bad stress dreams. So we had to stop watching
yeah.
it.
Yeah, because it didn't scare me when I watched it. But then at night, I'd go to sleep and have dreams of being in a zombie apocalypse every night.
Mm-hmm.
I think the worst one was all the zombies were little kids. Oh, and they were gosh. All coming after me. And it was horrible. And I was like, I think we're done with The Walking Dead for a while.
Yeah.
Just a few other little tips. I don't remember if I mentioned this one or not. But, and this is something my teachers always told me too, just reading as much as you possibly can makes you a better writer. Because you, like Katie said, you can be influenced by other styles of those different authors. It makes your vocabulary better and it helps with things, even like grammar, because that might not seem important, but it can change the way you read a sentence. It can change like the meaning you had, or it can change how clear it is to read. So I think just reading a ton is one of the best things you can do to be a better writer.
Right.
Yeah, that. I totally agree with that, especially like as you're actually growing up. I think reading is so important because it's like, I don't know, I just remember growing up reading, sitting on the couch, and I'd get to a word and I'd be like, Mom, what does this mean?
Yeah.
And she would tell me, and then I'd keep reading. Oh, okay, cool. Like, I don't know.
I remember doing that a lot with Mom. So glad that she
that's able to answer that. That's something that's been fun. It, you know, I read to Josie like constantly. But she's gotten to a point now where we'll be reading and she'll go, why do they say this? What does this mean? Why they say that word? And it's kind of neat because then I hear it in her vocabulary. She actually used the word culture yesterday.
Oh,
how did she use that in a sentence?
Well, I know, okay, that's cool. So
it's different from, so we were reading a Mo Willems Elephant and Piggy book and it's called I Really Like Slop. And at one point, Piggy goes, pigs love slop. It's part of pig culture. And she said something to me yesterday. What were we making? Oh, cake pops. We made cake pops. Those were like Josie's favorite thing. And she goes, I really love cake pops. It's part of my culture. And it just made me laugh because she was taking something. I knew immediately where she had gotten it from. But that's all part of the learning process, is taking those new little bits of knowledge and then trying them out on your own. So that's really cool to hear. And that was one of my favorite parts of teaching too, was seeing, we would use what I would call mentor texts. So it'd be a text, a book that I would come back to over and over again to point out different text features for the kids that I really wanted them to get a mastery over. And so it'd be some really good example of whatever it was that I was trying to teach them. And I loved going through their writing and seeing where they had experimented with it and tried out that new thing from that author. So that's like a really specific way that, you know, you can see another author's influence on your writing or on a kid's writing, I guess.
That's cool.
I have a question really quick. Once you're out of college, having like all of this writing experience, especially like the creative writing, how do you feel like you incorporate it or use it in your daily life? And do you find yourself like actually writing still, like just for fun?
I've written a little bit, and that's one of the things I can't really blame it on not having enough time, because I think I have more time than I did in college since I don't have homework anymore. But I have a hard time getting myself to write things when I don't have that deadline looming over me that I did in college with the assignments. But I've started a few different pieces and I don't think I've ever completely finished them. And I think it's because I need that deadline. But I think the creative writing, a lot of the times when you're writing emails and that sort of thing, you really don't, you don't want to use creative writing. You want it to be very to the point. You don't want to use the flowery fun language. Right. But I still think it's helpful, even like if I'm writing like birthday cards to people or whatever else to try to make it a little fun.
You do write really good. Yeah. Whenever you send me like cards and stuff, you do include a lot of good little notes here and there. And you draw little pictures. So
my goal is to make them fun to where you feel guilty about throwing them away and you're forced to keep them forever.
Oh, Amy, you've succeeded because I have so many of them like stacked up on my counter. That I can't throw away.
That's kind of, so my master's project was on feedback and goal setting with child writers, and how giving specific feedback and goal setting can impact their writing. And I think having, I think that the goal setting is one, and this was, so this was with kindergartners. And kindergartners are very, they're capable of setting goals, especially like when you scaffold it and help them out with it. But as adults as well, holding ourselves accountable and having that goal. So you've got like your long-term writing goal, but then even just weekly, like, okay, I'm going to answer this short little prompt. I think I got you a writing thing, didn't I, Amy?
You did. Like little prompts. I will eventually get to that. I know where it is.
But, you know, like having a goal being, you know, like one of my goals is I used to be really good about I would fill out a gratitude journal every single day. And that's something that I kind of got away from just this past year. I kind of stopped, like forgot about it, but I started doing it right after I had Josie, and I want to be very mindful of doing it again after this baby comes. And just it, like having it, it's just a blank journal, but with a date for, you put it with a blank space for each day, but just having that like out there and having it somewhere visible, and it like holds you accountable. So it's like, okay, I am going to get this practice. I am going to do this little bit of writing every single day. But just having that goal, I think helps, because otherwise it's kind of like, I can do it later. You know, like if you don't actually have that, like set out that time to do it, you know?
Exactly.
Okay. So I've tried to do the whole journaling thing before in the past, and I'll do really good for like a couple of weeks, and then I kind of stopped doing it. And I've noticed one thing, how you said that it has to be somewhere where you see it all the time. Well, I would leave it out, but then I had this fear that someone was going to come into my house and read all of these like deep thoughts that I was having, and I was going to be so embarrassed.
Karma coming back for you when you read mine and left notes in the margins.
What? I don't remember doing that. But couldn't have been me.
You even corrected my spelling.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. But I remember as a kid getting my diary read by multiple siblings and being like so embarrassed. So now I'm like, I don't know, I have this fear that someone's gonna like read my journal and it's gonna be embarrassing.
Because you have so many people, so many house guests over, Madeline.
I know, it's so stupid.
Honestly, but like, I felt that same way, and that's why, and it might sound silly because I don't think anyone would actually do this, but I bought a journal with a lock on it. Like it's like a leather journal with a little like code lock that you just like swirl into place. And I've had it since the start of my senior year of college. And I think what helped me is remembering like you don't have to write in it all the time, and just like whenever you get a moment, you can just continue to write it when you think about it. Just don't stop completely.
And I think what helped me too was not having you have to fill up a full page. It's like you write down.
I write whatever I want.
Mm-hmm. And some days I had a ton and some days I had like two lines, you know.
I think what made me want to do it just for like writing down what happens to me is when I was interviewing this woman. I think she was around like 96 years old at the time. And I asked, what advice would you give to a younger person? And she said, write everything down, journal it, write it down. Cause you're going to remember when you look back on your life, it's like flashes of a movie and you only see certain scenes. Write down who was there, what you did, how you felt. And I remember after hearing that thinking, oh my goodness, I need to journal more. I need to be better about it. She's so bright.
That's like inspiring me. I want to start like a journal, especially Katie, when you were like, yeah, after Josie was born, I was really good about it. And I'm like, I don't think I've written anything down barely since Mike was born.
You know, one of my favorite things that I've done was after Anna and I got married. Actually, Madeline, you gave me it. It was just a blank journal, but I happened to have it in the car with us when we went on our honeymoon, on our road trip. And I started a trip journal for us. And so every day I wrote down what we did, where we went, what we saw. I even included tore out like little pieces out of like little pamphlets of places we went to. And I drew pictures of stuff we saw. But I kept it in the car and I take it on every trip we go on. So like now I'm on our like third trip journal. So every time we go camping or we go on a little vacation, I write about it. And I really like it because then Aaron, he likes driving. I'm pretty much always the passenger. So it's something for me to do when I'm in the passenger seat. But I love going. It's not like it's been that long, but I mean, it's been long enough that I'll go back and I'll read some of the stuff. It's like, I completely forgot this happened. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of fun. Like, or you remember going to a place, but you forget some funny little detail. Like Aaron and I went to, Soap Lake like years ago for this like music festival, and we're there and I remember the festival, I remember all these things we did, and then I forgot that we had gone to this little park beforehand, and this woman was at the park pushing her chihuahua in the child swing, and oh my god, so funny. But it was one of those things that I would not have remembered if I hadn't gone back and reread and written it down in that journal. So that's something that anytime like someone I know gets married, I try to give them a little journal and like encourage them to do a trip journal. I think you gave me one.
Okay. You gave me one too.
Yeah.
Also like when your kids are grown and they can go back and read that, it'll be so cool for them because, I remember when our aunt died, we were like cleaning out her house.
Oh, right.
And we found I found this little tiny journal. It was like a pocket journal. And it was from when she lived in Italy for art school.
Oh, right.
And like, I felt kind of bad at first reading it because I was like, maybe I shouldn't be reading her like personal diary thing. But like, I couldn't stop myself at the same time because it was so interesting. And I was like, you know what? When I die, that's the time when they can read my journal and I won't care. So I was like, right. I'm justifying this, I guess. But it was so cool to read like from her perspective when she was like my age when I was reading it. And it was like, and it's besides, she was
gave me a better understanding. Like it showed me like a piece of her that I didn't know.
Yes. And it was so like, I don't know. I loved it. And I was like, I want to leave something for like my future kids. I mean, Micah and my future kids to read. But also I saw this thing where I've seen multiple people do this where they'll write a letter to their kid, like for every year that they're, you know, like for when they turn 1 and 2 and 3. And then they give them all these letters when they turn 18 for them to read. And I was
a really sweet idea.
Like, I really want to do that for him because I don't know. I think that's such a cool idea. Yeah. It'll be hard to remember to do, but if I just do it every year on his birthday, I'm sure I could.
I've started interviewing Josie and asking her questions to put into birthday cards for people. You know, like, what do you like about so-and-so? What's your favorite thing to do with them? And it's so funny to hear her tell me what it is that – and I write it down exactly the way, like, she says it. So I was asking her about Aaron's cousin – she calls him Uncle Alex, but Aaron's cousin Alex. And I was like, oh, tell me about Uncle Alex. Oh, him really tall. Him a good guy. He gives me good presents. And I can't remember what else she said about it. But it was really funny. Like, what does he like to do? Play the drums. And I'm like, he's never played the drums ever. But okay. So I'm like writing down all the stuff that she told me.
That's so cute.
But I love getting those kind of cards. And I think those are kind of fun for people to get.
Yeah, I remember seeing this thing right around Christmas time where it was like, this girl was saying how when she sends out Christmas cards, she makes sure to take the time to do a personalized letter for every single one. And so I was like, I'm going to do that.
Ugh, that's
and
a lot of work.
So I did it for almost all of my cards. And
I didn't get one of those. Oh, wait, never mind. I think I did get.
Yes, you did, Katie. But I tried to do it for all of my cards, and I didn't end up sending out most of our Christmas cards until January because it took me so long to do. And I didn't end up writing a personal letter on every single one, but I tried my best. So I don't know. I just think that's, it's very special to get something that someone wrote for you,
right?
Rather than just,
I feel the same way about thank you notes.
Yeah.
Oh, I just got yours, by the way. Thanks, Katie.
Oh, you're welcome. You just got it?
Maybe we forgot to check the mail.
Oh, I guess.
I'm not sure. Oh, yeah.
When you guys were gone for a while. It takes a while for mail to get to Alaska, I guess.
By the way, I just found this little, so we wrote these things called I Am From poems, and it's a pretty popular like poem prompt, I think. Mm-hmm. I remember doing it in our high school too. But there's this one, it, you kind of just write, like, I am from, that's how you start each stanza, and then you write little things, like, one of the ones I wrote was, I am from the local library, a storybook of leprechauns, covered with my four-year-old doodles, from the sweet, white-haired librarian who forgave my vandalism, sent me off to college with a graduation card. But there's one stanza that I found in particular that made me laugh and made me think of our last podcast about siblings. I am from tickle fights that got out of hand and ended with throwing hairbrushes. From three older siblings, their hand-me-down clothes, and I am always right wisdom. And just the fact that that scene where one of us threw the hairbrush is apparently, like, burned in our memories because I wrote it here. We both brought it up in the last podcast.
Amy, you threw the hairbrush at me.
I don't remember it going that way.
That's definitely the way it went.
I feel like you threw – maybe we had two hairbrushes. Maybe that's what it was.
I like that prompt though.
Yeah, I think it's a fun prompt.
It helps narrow it down. Whereas I think sometimes, especially like adults too, but with kids, it can be overwhelming to just say, okay, write something or write a true story. That's really broad. So if you can help narrow it down a little bit and give them something to focus on, that makes it a lot easier to start on.
Yeah, I was subbing in an English class a while back and the students, they were supposed to write a story. And it was supposed to be one of the most impactful and important things that has happened to them, or there's something really that like changed their life. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of an overwhelming topic for someone when they're 15 and 14 years old. Yeah. A lot of them hadn't had one really big thing that happened to them that changed their life that they could, you know,
right.
Usually haven't done that much at that age. And so I was trying to help them. I feel like it was a really, really broad problem. Yeah. I remember thinking, geez, I wish we could narrow this down or change it a little bit.
Right.
I wish this was my assignment.
Having assignments as a kid where the assignment would be something along the lines of, what was the best thing you did all summer? And I remember I always tried to avoid those things as a teacher because as a kid, you think, oh, this needs to be something big, like a trip to Disneyland, or it needs to be some big vacation. One, not all kids go on a big trip like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be hard for a kid to like think about one specific moment, whereas it could just be like, what was the time you had fun? Or, you know, it doesn't need to be what was the very best, because then that's hard to pick. And you know, like, we would have tons of fun just having like water fights and stuff outside, but sometimes it didn't feel like, oh, that was big enough,
right?
And so I think being careful how prompts are worded too, you know, from the educator standpoint.
What are both of your number one tips for somebody who like wants to start writing, but they don't know how or where to start?
I think there's a lot of really great prompts out there on the internet. And I think just not being super worried if it's going to be a masterpiece, and just writing and just kind of enjoying it. Like, if it's super fun, just try to enjoy it. I do this to myself sometimes too, thinking, I don't know if it's going to be funny enough or if it's going to be interesting enough. And I think having that, like, assignment, like, having to do it, got me to work past that and just write something in. And, you know, if it turned out good, great. If it didn't, that's okay. Next one will be better.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, if you don't have the assignment looming over your head, just make it fun, you know? Write and write what you want to write about.
Yeah, and like you said, make it something that you're familiar with. Either, you know, something that happened to you or something that you know really how to do really well. It could be like procedural writing, or you could be educating someone on a topic. But one thing that I would recommend is doing some oral storytelling and saying it out loud first. they get hung up on the actual physical writing part. So just mm-hmm. saying it out loud, you can tell it to somebody's, then you realize, oh, I actually do have more to say than I realized. Especially kids, you know, that might be struggling with spelling or grammar, have them say it out loud. And then once they realize, oh, I do have a lot to say, then they write it down. I would say write down the whole thing. Don't worry about grammar. Don't worry about spelling. Just get it on the page first, then go back and go through and start working on the spelling and the grammar. Whereas if you're kind of trying to do both at the same time, I think some of the content gets lost because it might, you might feel like, oh, I'm not totally sure how to spell this word, so I'm going to switch it for a word that maybe I don't like as well, but I know how to spell.
Mm-hmm.
So not being worried about, you know, just make the format, I guess, as much as the content, and then going back and working on that part.
I think it can also be good to experiment with different types of writing. I don't remember exactly the name for it, but one style I tried that first quarter of my creative writing class was you kind of tell a story through the alphabet. So you start with letter A and you pick something, like I remember I did Amy, you know, which makes sense. And then you write a little paragraph that goes with the story starting with that word. And then I went through the entire alphabet with that. Mm. I think I cheated a little bit. I think the letter X was like EX, like your ex. But you know, and then it, you know, you kind of just tell the story through these paragraphs and they might be a little out of order kind of, but you know, just trying different styles like that can be fun. Mm-hmm. Or like those ones where you write as if you're writing like a personalized ad, or maybe try writing poems, doing stanzas. I think just, you know, switching it up and trying different things can be helpful to see what works for you.
For my Christmas card last year, I did I made the letter rhyme, which was kind of fun. And so then it did kind of give me a format, and it kind of, I thought about, okay, what happened this year? What do I want to remember? And then I just kind of plugged it in and found with words that would rhyme with it. So that actually kind of almost made writing my Christmas card easier, because then it was like, okay, I have to use a word that rhymes with blah, blah, blah. And so giving myself that format helped. I was going to do it again this year. And then I was like, no, I've got pregnancy brain and writing is too hard right now.
I have to say, my favorite books when I'm reading like a bedtime story to Micah are the ones that rhyme.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like a lot of the writing ones. Josie's current favorite book is The Book with No Pictures by BJ Novak. He's in The Office. He's like a comedy writer, but it's so funny. It's the whole premise of the book is that there are no pictures in it, but that the grown-up reading the book has to say all the ridiculous things that are on the page. And she just thinks it is hilarious. That I have to say things like boo-boo butt, and I don't even know what all it is. So that's her favorite right now. I feel like with writing and reading, they are so intertwined. You know, it's got a few more days left in January. I know, Madeline, one of your resolutions, I guess, was to read at least one book a month, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so throughout this year, I don't know about you, Amy. I know I do at least one a month as well. I think you do too, Amy. We'll be touching base. We'll be coming back to that, you know, end of this year, and kind of talking about what some of our favorite ones were. So I'd be interested to hear from some of our listeners too what some of their favorite books are, and getting some recommendations for the rest of the year.
Especially any like fantasy series, because that's kind of what I'm going to roll with those right now.
All right. Well, that was honestly very interesting. And I feel like we could have kept talking for a really long time about this topic. So yeah, I hope that this episode inspired you to start writing or journaling, maybe poetry. I think that writing is a great thing for anyone. I think that it's a really good way to get out tough emotions, or when you're feeling stuck. This is the same thing as like creative writing, but to-do lists are like one of my favorite things, just to get things out of my head and onto paper. And just any kind of writing I think is good. Katie gave me this book for Christmas that is it's like you answer a question every day for 5 years. So it gives you like a prompt, and then you answer it, and each year you do a different answer. So I've actually kept up with that one so far this year, so hopefully I can continue to do so. Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. I hadn't seen one of those. I got a similar book for grandma that I hope she's filling out, but each page it's like a do-it-yourself autobiography.
Oh, I've heard those.
Each page has a question about something in her life.
Oh, I hope she does that.
Because a lot of the time you'll hear the same stories. But if you have a specific, like we said before, if you have a specific question, or like, even after all these years, I'll still hear some new stories from her every once in a while, because like I'll ask the right question or we'll get on the right topic. So it'll ask a specific question, like something about her childhood, or like, what is your favorite meal to make, or whatever it is. So it'll give you just a little bit more perspective on that person.
Yeah, definitely.
Now I want her to write that so we can go through and read it. I hope she does. That's cool. Alrighty. Well, thanks for letting me read those pieces. Kind of forgotten what some of them said. It's been a while. So it's almost like reading something someone else wrote, because it's been so long.
Yeah.
We, next time, I think definitely Katie will have her baby here. So that'll be fun to hear an update on. And thank you guys so much for listening. We will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.